It's Heather.
Ferg, and the newest new old friend. Back with another chapter of Crimes, Clues and Christmas, the audio advent calendar from Comedy Whodunits for Your Ears.
Finally, someone's popped their clog.
Heather!
I just mean it's better for a whodunit if something has actually been done for a who to do for you to guess who did do the do that was done.
What?
I don't know.
Right, anyway. So if you're enjoying the story, Sean Connery just popped in there. If you're enjoying the story, please do head over to iTunes and leave us a review. 5 stars, please. And spread the word in whatever way you can.
Okay, today's Christmas quiz question is...
Neither of us can speak this morning. Sleep deprived.
What are Morecambe and Wise's first names?
Oh, I know.
Hashtag not quiz.
Now, to see how Daisy's death plays out in Crimes, Clues and Christmas.
Ding, 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 ding dong, merry on high.
No. Ding, ding.
Crimes, Clues and Christmas, Chapter 9.
A sandbag just fell and crushed Daisy,
Rudy blurted out.
She's dead!
Those two final words, she's dead, unlocked the room from its stasis. The ensemble dancers all screamed and fled in several different combinations of upstage, downstage, stage left and stage right, but eventually all found the wings in the warren of corridors that led to their far less salubrious quarters. 2 stagehands appeared from somewhere with a stretcher and carried Daisy Love's lifeless body away, presumably to somewhere cool to await the coroner. Michael Barrington sunk to his knees and started sobbing.
My baby. My beautiful baby.
The indefinably alluring Chasma Constance bowed her head in a way I found alluring but couldn't define. Rudy Lightfoot was staring at the heavens, moving his mouth silently, perhaps in prayer. Meanwhile, the elderly Eldridge Rawlins was covering his enormous ears with his hands and rocking slightly backwards and forwards. I went over to him and placed a kindly hand upon his shoulder. "Are you okay, sir?" I asked in my most soothing voice.
"Ye gods, Artrich! I've just seen a young woman's life snuffed out before my very eyes. Of course I'm not okay, you blockhead!"
I understood the old man had had a shock, but I thought casting aspersions re one's bonce resembling a block was a bit much. I should like to see the block which can claim to be the equal of the Artrich Fizzog. I'd half a mind to let the codger know I wasn't one to stand for such besmirching of my noggin, until the other half of my mind reminding me I still hope to touch the kindly old soul for a reward on account of my recovering his lost jewels. "Of course, sir. I just meant, you're physically unharmed?"
"No, yes, just shocked. Will someone call for an ambulance?"
he said, collapsing down into a chair. Chaz answered him, nimbly leaping down from the stage apron.
"I'll go, sir. There's a telephone at stage door."
"Thank you, Charlotte. You're a good woman,"
Dot Clitheroe replied, folding down the seat next to old Eldridge and pulling herself up into it with a
hup.
"You want a cigarette?"
she offered, holding out a selection of 3 already lit.
No thank you, Dot."
"Artrich?"
"No thank you, Dot. A time like this requires a proper smoke." I reached into my jacket and retrieved my pipe, bowl already packed, and lit it with a match. The mere presence of the fine apparatus in my hand was soothing, and as I sucked in a mouthful of smooth smoke, I could feel my brain beginning to slow down and process matters. I'd been hired by my club chairman, Eldridge Rawlins. The elderly man with elephantine ears sat dazed alongside me. He was also the patron-in-chief here at the ballet, and had tasked me with recovering a set of expensive jewels to be used in a current production which had been lifted from a locked safe. I, being the top-notch investigator that I am, had quickly ascertained a list of suspects and worked my way through them methodically before discovering the stolen items in the dressing room of the new prima ballerina, Daisy Love. The same Daisy Love who had so recently met her demise by application of sandbagged cranium from great height with grave force. A mind as sharp as mine could not help but cut straight to the crux of the issue and notice that this was quite the coincidence. I felt duty-bound to stick around and investigate further. Was this a tragic workplace accident or something more? I felt I should relay said feelings to Rawlins, and so I said, "Sir, I feel duty-bound to stick around and investigate further. Was this a simple workplace accident or something more?" Which, I think you'll agree, sums up the gist of my wishes quite well. Dot Clitheroe, the general manager of the ballet, chose this moment to stick her oar in and give it a wiggle. I don't know if you've ever been part of a coxless four, or indeed a four in full possession of their cocks. That's your business. But what I'm driving at is if you're stroking along, and then someone gets it into their head to stop stroking and simply stick an oar in and give it a wiggle, it can cause the whole situation to go pot over tea kettle. Which is rather the effect of Dot's interjection here.
I don't know what good him sticking around would do, Mr. Rawlins. All due respect, Mr. Archridge.
She began, a sure sign someone is about to give considerably less than the respect that is due.
But you didn't get anywhere with the jewel theft and the police will be here soon. Much better Mr. Archridge just sits back and lets them get on with it. I'm sure they'll be here and be able to show what was just a horrible, horrible accident in no time.
Do you think so, Dot?
I absolutely do, Mr. Rawlins,
croaked the little woman. She clearly had Rawlins' ear, and for a woman of her size it was no mean feat, given she could probably have curled up inside the ear in question. But I was not to be dismissed so easily. I was involved in this case now, and I wasn't about to suffer the demotion from investigator to mere witness with a whimper. I'm afraid your information's a little out of date, Mrs. Clitheroe, I began, raising my voice a little to match the occasion. I was sent here to investigate the theft of the Prima's jewels and investigate the case I did. I solved it not 15 minutes ago. I finished with a flourish. The volume of my announcement had attracted the attention of those remaining on stage, Rudy Lightfoot and Michael Barrington. I was also suddenly aware that the stage tannoy system would probably be picking up my voice and relaying it to all in the dressing rooms. I've always felt my voice suited radio perfectly. It goes without saying that film is the medium for my face. But I made a point to improve my diction from here on in.
You solved the case?
Asked Rawlins. But I was concerned his aged vocal cords wouldn't have the power to reach the microphone wherever it was, so I took a pull on my trusty pipe and repeated his question for him. Have I solved the case, Mr. Rawlins? Have I, Peter Archridge, solved the case? If I say I have, then you can rest assured I have. I was really getting into it now, biting off each word with a flourish of my shank. I felt certain that my remote audience would be loving my work. Sadly, those in the room were less enamoured with my broadcasting style.
Why are you talking like that?
Demanded Dot.
You sound like a riot.
Diction, Mrs. Clitheroe. I'm using increased diction. I want my words to be clearly heard, and diction is the answer.
Well, you sound like a riot.
I saw where she was going and cut her off. Thank you, that's quite enough of that.
If you solve the case, Archridge, who stole the jewels?
Asked Rawlins, getting us back on track.
Daisy Love!
I declared triumphantly, thrusting my pipe skyward. It was only when I heard the tutting and saw the shaking of heads of Barrington, Lightfoot, Rawlins and Dot that I realised I'd rather lost sight of the moment. It was the director who put into words what everyone was thinking. I say, even if that's true, Archridge, it's a bit poor form to be laying it at her feet now, isn't it? I mean, she isn't exactly in a position to defend herself, is she? He was absolutely right. I'd got carried away. No, you're quite right, Barrington. I'm sorry, I got a bit caught up in the moment there. I see that now. But the fact remains that the evidence is pretty overwhelming.
What evidence?
Challenged Dot. Well, we detectives like to look for who has... I had a quick glance to check that Chaz wasn't back from making the telephone call. Motive, opportunity and means. It was well known that Daisy was being underpaid considering her promotion to Prima Ballerina. That provides the motive. Opportunity. She was right here on the night in question and knew that the jewels were real and where they were kept. As for means... Well, thanks to some very lax security measures by Dot, I shot her a look, pretty much everyone had the means to open the safe.
That's all very compelling, Archridge, but I'm sure the same could be said of many. What proof do you have?
I was rather hoping you'd ask me that, sir. I was actually coming to fetch you before the, incident. If you'd all like to follow me, I can show you my proof. I led the group, now joined by Chaz, through the pass door and along the corridor, which had a lingering odour of honeysuckle, to Daisy's dressing room. When we entered, the room felt different somehow, as though it knew its former occupant had been struck down by tragedy. The flowers didn't seem as lively, and the lights around the mirrors felt slightly dimmed. Well, queried Barrington, let's see your proof, Mr. Archridge. Without a word, I grabbed hold of the bunch of flowers I knew to contain the earrings and choker and lifted the blooms out. They took it in turns to look down into the vase, first Rawlins, then Dot, Barrington, Rudy, and finally Chaz. Each of them barely reacted. A raised eyebrow here, a cheek blown out there, and I was beginning to worry that someone had returned to the dressing room after I'd left and re-stolen the stolen charms. Finally, Rawlins spoke.
That does seem rather conclusive. You found the rings, too?
In that vase there, sir, I replied, indicating the guilty vessel.
Very impressive, lad. Very impressive.
How did you solve it, Mr. Oxtridge?
Asked Dot. The cigarettes in her mouth had multiplied. 6 burning sticks were now stuck between her lips.
Yes, how did you solve it?
Echoed Chaz, a glint of mischief in her eyes. Oh, well, I just interviewed the key players, took statements and, you know, followed up any leads that became apparent.
Really? That's fascinating.
I could tell she was mocking me slightly, but I found that I didn't really mind. Thank you, I smiled back at her. So, Mr. Rawlins, can I stay and continue to investigate? I feel connected to it.
Let's see what the police say when they get here.
We all decamped back to the foyer. There seemed to be an unspoken agreement between us that staying amongst the dead woman's things was a little unsavoury. We were joined by Marlena and Cakey as we waited. So it was that we were sat clustered around the bar an hour or so later on, when a shortish, dishevelled man turned up in a scruffy beige Macintosh. He had tight, dark curls on his head and at least a full day's growth of black stubble. He reminded me a little of my fan, who'd accosted me the night prior and so upset the great Marlena Schweinvolger.
Evening, all. I'm Inspector Sean O'Ralby with the Met Police.
He purred with a Celtic accent from over the Irish Sea.
You've taken far too long to get here. We're going to have to pull tonight's show now.
Snapped Dot through her habitual mouthful of cigarettes.
Dot, Daisy died. Of course we're going to pull tonight's show.
Snapped Barrington right back.
Yes, quite right. It's the only respectful thing to do, I added. Glad to see Dot taken down a peg or two.
But Barrington wasn't quite on the same page.
Respect for the dance. There's no way I can have Marlena ready for at least a day.
I rolled my eyes at the capricious nature of artists, and Inspector O'Ralby scratched at his stubble before he spoke again.
Sorry for the delay in getting here. I was a bit tied up with a previous case, and dispatch said it was likely an accidental death. That is the case, isn't it?
Yes,
said Dot quickly.
Maybe, Inspector, I cut in. I'm Peter Artridge, art investigator. You may have heard about my exploits at Richtenstern. Either way, I was here on another matter which may interest you.
Ah, yes, I'm aware of the case. You had your bacon saved by a young girl, didn't you?
It's amazing how facts can get twisted along the grapevine. I was integral in bringing the killer to justice and lives were saved. Let's just leave it at that, shall we?
Right. And you think there might be something fishy going on here?
I shouldn't like to say that as yet, but I'd very much like to assist you in your inquiries, if you'd be willing.
I can't see why not. We're a bit understaffed at the moment, so an extra pair of hands and eyes could be useful. But I'll warn you now, I'll not be engaging in any flights of fancy from an excited amateur.
No, flights of fancy indeed.
A lesser man might be tempted to throw these words back in the face of Inspector Sean O'Ralby, given what transpired after this moment. They might say his dismissive nonchalance makes him look like a prize idiot with hindsight. He's jolly lucky I'm a more forgiving chap than that.
Crimes, Clues and Christmas is a New Old Friends production, part of the Comedy Whodunits For Your Ears podcast series. Written and performed by Fergus Woods-Dunlop and Heather Westwell, with sound and music by Fred Riding. New Old Friends gratefully acknowledge the support of Arts Council England in making Comedy Whodunits For Your Ears.